2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, we take a look at what to me is one of the most fascinating parts of LDS church history, and that is the loss of the 116 pages of the Book of Mormon. Have you ever wondered what portion of the Book of Mormon was lost? Where, if you thumb through today's printed Book of Mormon, was the portion that was replaced, and from whence was the translation recommenced to the end? It's a fascinating story. Today, that's what we cover on Religion Today. First of all, a short summary. The lost 116 pages were the original manuscript pages of what Joseph Smith said was the translation of the Book of Lehi, the first portion of the golden plates that were revealed to him by the angel in 1827. These plates were the first part of the original manuscript. It hadn't been copied. It hadn't been duplicated onto a printer's manuscript. All that would come later. The original and only manuscript of the first 116 pages were lost by Joseph Smith's then scribe Martin Harris during the summer of 1828. Although I've heard from time to time, once even a couple of summers ago, leads about where the lost 116 pages are, most scholars believe they were destroyed, and I tend to believe that was the case. The 116 pages comprised some or most of the Book of Lehi. We don't know how much. And that was not retranslated. Instead, the Book of Lehi was replaced, or at least the portion that had been translated was replaced by an abridgment taken from the small plates of Nephi. So with that little summary, now on to some of the details. Joseph Smith described that he had received from an angel plates in 1827, specifically on September 22nd, on a hill close to the home where his family lived in Manchester, New York. Martin Harris was a highly respected farmer from nearby Palmyra, and he became an early believer in Joseph Smith. He gave Joseph Smith $50, which was quite a sum in that era, to finance the translation of the plates. Lucy Harris, not to be confused with Lucy Mack Smith, Lucy Harris, Martin Harris's wife, also donated some of her own money and offered to give more for the translation. But she was not allowed to see the plates. Only certain people were, according to the will of God and the angel Moroni. And so she began to be a bit disgruntled. Joseph Smith and his wife Emma move to Emma's hometown, which was Harmony, Pennsylvania, which was very close by. This happened in October of 1827. And that is where Joseph Smith began transcribing the writing or characters that were on the plates. And when he had finished doing this, and this is what will later be called the Anton transcript, when Martin Harris left Palmyra, he did this at one point to visit Joseph Smith without taking his wife, Lucy, along with him. And so Lucy Harris became even more unhappy. Now, when Martin Harris returned home, Lucy was unhappy, refused to sleep in the same bed with him, and had her daughter's boyfriend secretly copy the characters on the Anton transcript. Now, the Anton transcript is called the Anton transcript because Martin Harris had taken the characters that he had written off or copied that had been copied off from the plates to Professor Charles Anton at Columbia University. He did this, we would say today, as part of his own due diligence to assure himself that the plates in the translation were true and accurate. He was convinced after seeing Professor Anton. So he came back. He had this transcript, which we now call the Anton transcript. And his wife, Lucy, had her daughter's boyfriend secretly make a copy of this. And then Lucy Harris accompanied her husband back to Harmony in April of 1828. And that's when Martin was serving as scribe. Before returning home after 2 weeks, Lucy Harris searched the Smith family home and grounds for the plates. She wanted to see him, even though she was told she couldn't. She didn't find him. Later, Joseph Smith said that he had hidden the plates nearby in the woods. From April to June of 1828, Martin Harris acted as scribe. Joseph Smith dictated the manuscript from the Urim and Thummim. By the middle of June, about 116 manuscript pages had been dictated by Joseph Smith and written by Martin Harris. Now, this would have been a considerable amount because the dictation was written down in fairly small handwriting on what is called foolscap paper, which is about twice the size. Each sheet is about twice the size as today's 8.5 by 11 paper. So 116 pages was a lot. Martin Harris continued to have problems with his wife, Lucy. Joseph Smith's mother, also named Lucy, described later in her biography that Martin Harris asked Joseph Smith for a look at the plates, for a further witness of them and their existence. When that was denied, he asked to be able to see the manuscript. He was told no, but he kept asking and pressuring. And finally, after being denied, Joseph Smith, with a great deal of uneasiness, said that the Lord had given permission, and he allowed Martin Harris to take the manuscript back to Palmyra on condition that he show them to only five specifically named family members. He even made Martin Harris bind himself with a solemn promise that he would do that. But when Martin Harris returned home, he showed the manuscript not only to his wife, Lucy, who suggested that the manuscript be locked in her bureau, but Martin, over successive days, showed the plates not only to the five authorized relatives, but to a number of other friends and visitors as well. Now, at some point during this time period, Martin Harris picked the lock on his wife's bureau and damaged it, which made her even more angry at everything that was going on. And about this time, the manuscript disappeared and was never seen again. Now, right after Martin Harris had left Harmony, Joseph Smith's wife gave birth to their firstborn son, who died less than a day after delivery. Emma, his wife, nearly died as well, and Joseph Smith cared for her for 2 weeks. When she had gained enough strength, Joseph Smith left her in the care of her mother and went back to Palmyra in search of Martin Harris and the manuscript. Now, when we come back, more about Martin Harris, the manuscript, the loss of this 116 pages, which is a fascinating story. If you have questions or comments about this show, send me an email to martinstanner@gmail.com, and I will be happy to respond. martinstanner@gmail.com. We'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned. We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. The following day, after Joseph Smith went out to try to find Martin Harris, he shows up at the Smith family farm in great distress because he lost the 116 pages. Joseph Smith told Martin, go search your house again. But Martin's response was, he'd already done that. He'd ripped open beds, pillows, everything. At this point, Joseph Smith cries out, oh no, all is lost. All is lost. What shall I do? I've sinned. It is I who have tempted the wrath of God. After returning to Harmony without Martin Harris, Joseph Smith dictated to his wife, Emma, his first written revelation, which soundly rebuked Joseph Smith and described Martin Harris as a sinful man. The revelation assured Joseph Smith that if he repented, he would again have the ability to translate. Joseph Smith said, quote, immediately after my return home, which would have been to Harmony, Pennsylvania, I was walking out a little distance when, behold, the former heavenly messenger appeared and handed to me the Urim and Thummim, close quote. Joseph Smith said that from that point, he used the interpreters to receive a revelation, which today is known as Section 3 of the Doctrine and Covenants. Then the angel again took away the plates and the interpreters before returning them a few days later. Lucy Mack Smith, Joseph's mother, recalled that the angel promised the plates and interpreters would be returned if he were sufficiently worthy. David Whitmer and Emma recalled that at least a portion of the remaining part of the Book of Mormon was done with the aid of the seer stone after some point at which the Urim and Thummim had been taken again by the angel. In April of 1829, Joseph Smith was rejoined in the translation process by a new person, this time Oliver Cowdery of Vermont, who replaced Martin Harris as scribe. So the process was rejoined, but a different individual was acting as scribe. The pace of the translation increased quite dramatically, so that within just a couple of months, nearly the entire rest of the Book of Mormon was finished. So what was translated? Joseph Smith did not retranslate the material that Martin Harris had lost, the 116 pages. The Lord told Joseph Smith that evil men would alter the manuscript in an effort to discredit him. Joseph Smith instead was to replace the lost material with Nephi's account of the same basic events. It's interesting to think that at least one of the evil men who would later try to alter the lost manuscript to contradict the new account would be Mark Hoffman, the forger, in 1984. I remember that time period quite well. Hoffman's ultimate forgery goal was to forge the lost 116 pages. He had already forged different documents so that about half of the known Martin Harris authored documents were actually not written by Harris, but by Mark Hoffman. His ultimate goal was to fake the 116 lost pages, and to do that in a much different way, of course, than they would originally have been written. When the 116 pages were lost, Joseph Smith didn't retranslate the lost portion first and then continue on to the end. Instead, Joseph Smith continued translating from where he had left off, translating clear to the end of Moroni, and then went back to the beginning to translate from the abridgment of the small plates to replace the part of the Book of Mormon. This is now the first part of the Book of Mormon. Although, of course, there are critics who suggest the lost 116 pages and replacement suggests Joseph Smith was not a genuine prophet. I see this quite differently. No one with Joseph Smith's background, or frankly, anyone else with any background, could have produced a book like the Book of Mormon. Martin Harris was convinced. He was one of the three witnesses, and he had mortgaged his farm for $3,000 to finance the publication of the Book of Mormon. And even though he lost his wife, who divorced him, and lost the farm, which eventually was sold to pay for publication of the Book of Mormon, and for a time he left the church to join another one, Martin Harris always affirmed that he had seen the plates and that the Book of Mormon was true. This to me is quite remarkable and very, very suggestive of the authenticity of the Book of Mormon. On his deathbed in Cache Valley, Utah, near Logan, Martin Harris said, quote, "The Book of Mormon is no fake. I know what I know. I have seen what I have seen, and I have heard what I have heard, and I have seen the gold place from which the Book of Mormon is written. An angel appeared to me and others and testified to the truthfulness of the record, and had I been willing to have perjured myself and sworn falsely to the testimony I now bear, I could have been a rich man, but I could not have testified other than I have done and am now doing, for these things are true." Close quote. That's an amazing testimony. Joseph Smith was told not to translate again the part which was lost. Take a look at Doctrine and Covenants, section 10, verse 30. This was, of course, the part from the Book of Lehi. So Joseph Smith kept translating until he finished, and then he replaced the lost part from the small plates of Nephi. Now, what happened is that if you look at Doctrine and Covenants, section 10, verses 38, 41, and 42, it says, right where he's going to translate, it says, "You shall translate the engravings which are on the plates of Nephi down until you come to the reign of King Benjamin, or until you come to that part which you have translated, which you have retained. Then you shall publish it as the record of Nephi." Now, in the printer's manuscript, the first chapter of the Book of Mosiah is listed as chapter 3, and that's been crossed out and turned into chapter 1 of our current Book of Mosiah. This is where the lost 116 pages ended and the new part continued on. This indicates the first two chapters that were lost were the lost part that was on the 116 pages. Every other book in the Book of Mormon except Mosiah is named after its main author. Instead, Mosiah begins with King Benjamin and not the actual author, Mosiah, or the person after whom it's named. Up to our current Book of Mosiah is where the Book of Lehi was translated and lost by Martin Harris and then replaced. This is a fascinating story. You can see, if you take a look at the printer's manuscript, where the 116 pages ended and where the new portion continued on. So there you go. That's the story of the lost 116 pages. Be in touch if you have questions or comments about it. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.